Recordings have started.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the CCWG new GTLD auction proceeds call held on Thursday, the 29th of March, 2018. Attendance for today's meeting will be taken by the WebEx room and the audio bridge. If you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? And I do know that Caboose is currently on the audio bridge. Anyone else?
Yeah, Ellie is on the audio bridge.
Okay, thank you.
And Stephanie, I believe, is on the audio bridge.
Hadia, I believe, is also on the audio bridge. Okay. All right, and I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for the transcription, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid background noise. And with this, I'll turn it back over to Erica Mann. Thank you.
Thank you so much. This is Erica Mann. So I like to move to our next point, which is the welcome. So welcome, everybody. And I hope you enjoy this new Cisco WebEx tool, which is a little bit different than Adobe. And we are already experiencing some difficulties. But I believe we will learn. And so let us just move forward. Let me ask you if we have some updates concerning the conflict of interest declaration. And that's not the case. I have to declare that, which is not related to auction proceeds, but the company I work for, Covington, we do have clients which are interested in, because of different interests on who is and in dispute case. So I will have to update the conflict of interest declaration. I did it on the WHOIS form, but I haven't done it yet elsewhere. So I hope to be able to do it as soon as possible. Somebody else?
Erica, this is Ching Chao. Yeah. I do not have the SOI, but I have just a reminder of how to raise hands in the chat room. So if everybody can see on the WebEx, there's a little hand icon in the right-hand side, so you'll be seeing that. So just like to remind everybody, you still can raise hand and speak.
Yeah, so we will have some issues. I would say once we have made the introduction, or maybe we do it quickly before Ching, if you want to give this quick update again. So we do have some... Just be reminded that on the WebEx, not for everybody, the site you will see on your computer looks identical. So we do have some issues here. But Ching was just reminding us in the case you want to mute and in the case how to raise your hand. So if you want to mute, you have to go to the little, on the top, there's a name which shows as panelist. And there's on the left side from the name panelist a little triangle. You have to click on it, and then it's small, the outline of the design changes a bit, and suddenly you see right from your name, you see the option to mute. It's a little bit complicated. So, Ching, again, where do we find the raise hand button?
I mean, so I'm using a Mac version of WebEx. So the mute button is actually, you know, in the middle of the right-hand side of the screen. So you'll be seeing a mute button. And also the raise hand button, what I see is right on top of my, there's a little bar with the chat room. So on top of the chat room and also on my screen on the middle right-hand side, you'll be seeing a hand icon. And when you click it, you'll be able to, If in the WebEx can see me raising hand, like I have this gray hand, I mean, icon showing up now.
The problem is, but we don't want to go into it. The trouble is, one always has to move between different opening of the site to see when, and which is a little bit problematic. But let's go forward and let's test how far we can go. How far we are capable in managing a new technology. So if there's no further update, then let's move to the next item on the agenda, which is our exchange with our external expert, Russell Hayward from Nominate. Russell, thank you so much for joining us. We already had the pleasure to experience your in-depth knowledge and experience in the topic we want to talk to you about at our meeting, which we had in San Jose. It was such a pleasure to have you there, and we are so grateful that you are joining us again today for a longer debate and exchange. We only have two topics today. It's the discussion we like to have with you, and then at the very end, we have to review our work done, but that's all. So we want to spend as much time as possible with you. Now, I think it is important to mention that you joined about Nominate about 3 years ago, that you, before that, I looked at it, you had an interesting career because you worked for venture partners. And for Thomson Reuters for many, many years. So you have an experience in funding environments, which I gather from your work with venture partners, and you have a long international strategic career as well. And then you moved to Nominate, which brings you much closer to our environment. Somebody needs to mute. Somebody needs to mute. I hear a TV or a radio.
Questions I just showed you, or any other matter you'd like to talk about. Send your ideas to
Can we identify who it is?
I
am looking.
All of those and share the best.
You don't hear this, what I hear? Thank you so much. So, Russell, thank you so much for being with us. We are really looking forward. And just give me one more topic, which I think is interesting to hear from you, because you mentioned in San Jose that the experience you have with the Nominate Foundation actually started as a kind of foundation which you created first outside of Nominate, and that you are currently in the process of insourcing the foundation which you had built before. So I believe we are very much interested in hearing your expertise with this foundation, the reason why you outsourced it first, and then the reason why you are considering or you are insourcing it now. If you remember, we are still at an early phase to identify what is the best model, or as we call it, the best mechanism in our case. There's no experience in the ICANN environment about having built a foundation before, so we are deeply interested in your case. Please be so kind, just introduce yourself again if you want to, and then tell us whatever you like to tell us.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you very much for the introduction. For the record, it's Russell Howarth from Nominate. I will try and answer the brief, and happy to take questions as we go. And I will try and tackle the first part of the question, which is around why did Nominate originally set up the Nominate Trust? And so, as you mentioned, I've been here for 3 years, and the trust was set up before my time. So I'll tell you what I know, and hopefully that's a fairly accurate representation of the truth. But there are follow-on detailed questions, and I can get our legal team to shed some more specific light on it. But in essence, what Nominate as a country code has been very much an organization focused on public benefit. And so, in like many of the CCs of scale, we've been operating a very successful registry, and over the years have built that up to what is now over 12 million domains under management. But back in 2008, the decision was made by the board that in order to meet our public benefit goals, what we wanted to do was set up an independent organization that was effectively taking some of the surplus and specifically looking at how it can invest, when I say invest, I mean give grants to organizations and via the trust to individual companies to effectively do public good, and all of that with a technology bias. So in effect, perhaps different to the way that ICANN has, Nominet had yearly profits that it needed to either put on the balance sheet or put towards something of public benefit good. Now, we could do one of two things. We could have done that in-house at Nominet and set up a department, or we could have set up a trust. And the benefits of setting up a trust is that in the UK, at least, there are some tax advantages. And what that meant is once we generate profit from our P&L, we got some tax relief by essentially donating some of that money to the Nominet Trust, which I think is distinct from the situation that we're talking about here, in the sense that ICANN have got almost a lump sum. So there may be a different dynamic than we faced at Nominet, but I will tell you what I know from Nominet, and we can try and compare and contrast between the current situation at ICANN. So to follow the story, Nominet Trust was set up in 2008, and effectively the relationship between Nominet and Nominet Trust was that we gave roughly £3 million per year into the Nominet Trust. Now, the Nominet Trust had its own board of trustees, and it essentially a large part of its governance was a board of trustees, one of which, or a couple of which, could be made up from Nominet. But the objective of having its own board of trustees and Nominet Trust was that it was able to identify its own strategy to a degree, and also look at what best it should invest in. When I say invest, I mean give grants to. And effectively, what it did was build itself out over the years to be the UK's leading social tech investment. And so when we look at where it's evolved from and where it's progressed to, it started with giving grants to smaller organizations, businesses who were focused on everything from printing prosthetic limbs for individuals to businesses which were essentially using technology to support young children that were physically disadvantaged. And it was all of these initiatives that they were giving money to small businesses who wanted to make a difference in people's lives. Now, some of these businesses were for-profit and some of them were not-for-profit. But in essence, the money was granted through a series of grants, mostly very early stage companies, so they could try and get a helping hand as they wanted to investigate or accelerate their social tech investment and businesses. And the monies that went from Nominet Trust into these businesses had what we think is a big impact. Now, over the years, Nominet Trust have developed a series of mechanisms whereby one of the investment and granting criteria is that the companies who receive the investment measure social impact. And so this became quite a sophisticated way of looking at what the organizations who received the grants were trying to achieve and how they were measuring that. So we think that's a very good thing to do. Now, the other twist to the business model is it also worked with other venture capital firms who are looking to invest in the social technology space, as well as businesses looking to grow, mostly in the UK, I have to say, that wanted to leverage the funds from a Nominet Trust. But equally, we worked with larger organizations, large charitable organizations, who were trying to appropriate funds for larger scale initiatives. So Comet Relief, as many of you may know, or Save the Children, funds like that, which Nominet Trust worked with to have a social impact. So let me just pause there and perhaps open it up for any comments or questions, because I'm sure we could I could talk about Nominet Trust for quite a while, but I think as it specifically relates to this circumstance, others may have some questions that you might want to explore at this stage.
Elliot McHugh.
Please.
Yeah, thanks. It's Elliot Noss. I wondered if you could talk about the Nominet mission and how the foundation's actions relate to the mission. You know, specifically, as I understand it, Nominet does have a mission, you know, in their chartering documents, and it sounds as if the foundation is quite broad in the grants. So, you know, if you could speak to that, that would be great. Thanks.
Yeah. So I think that it's fair to say that the areas of social tech is very broad. And so where we wanted to really focus the trust was around having a principally one of increasing digital skills. So about 3 years ago, we looked at shaping what we mean by the social tech, and effectively what we said was we want to try and influence Nominet Trust to focus on digital inclusivity, i.e. digital skills, security, and getting more people online. And so that how that relates to Nominet, well, actually, the more people go online and the more people theoretically would want a .uk email address and actually more vibrant internet space, keeping people safe online was obviously a key element and concern of us as we run the .uk namespace, and increasing the number of people who have from different age groups, different social backgrounds, the ability to access the internet and get educated via various initiatives was important as well. So it's about inclusion, digital skills, and safety.
Follow on, if I could.
Yep.
That sounds, so I want to, you know, where we're struggling is, you know, there are some efforts to really narrow what the CCWG can recommend in terms of conformance with the ICANN mission. So I understood everything you said. It made great sense to me. Frankly, you know, we'd love to be, you know, taking similar approaches. Did you have any issues relating those, you know, the work of the foundation to the Nominet mission specifically, to the Nominet charter, separate from the foundation?
Yeah.
You know, I think you described, you know, I think you described rightly, you know, the remit of the foundation from the organization. But I'm talking about sort of a specific kind of legal atonement to the charter.
So let me try and answer that. Let me try and interpret your question and tell me if you need any more on that. There are two aspects to it, one of which is Nominet's Nominet has a fairly broad charter in the sense that we have the ability to set our own strategy. Our corporate strategy has actually evolved, certainly over the last 3 years. And in essence, where we're focused on is very much what we can do to diversify the business, as well as focusing on delivering, you know, solid country code namespace. So if you think about what Nominet is constitutionally set up to do, we are there to deliver public benefit, but actually we set our own strategy. So we are a company limited by guarantee. We have our own board, which is distinct from the Nominet Trust. We set our own strategy and appropriate the funds to .uk in the first and foremost, but then to other initiatives as we try to execute on the strategy. So, for example, recently it's been looking at what we can do to enter into the cybersecurity market. So how that relates to Nominet Trust, which is a separate legal entity, and there are memorandums of understanding between Nominet Trust and Nominet to try and better align what we have been doing as a Nominet organization and what Nominet Trust are doing. And that's less of a legal arrangement, but one which we try and ensure that we are seeing eye to eye, and we have regular meetings between the Nominet board and the Nominet trustees to ensure that we are aligned to the best extent we can, but also recognizing that there's legal independence between Nominet and Nominet Trust.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Now, it may be worth coming on to the second part of the tale here, which is what's happened recently.
Can you wait a second? Russell, can you wait a second? We have Alan in the queue. I would love to take him.
Yeah, thank you. I was just going to say that the limitation of mission on what we can do with our funds is a very ICANN-specific thing, and I'd like to get back to the experience that Nominet has with their trust and why they're bringing it inside. So, yes, please go ahead.
Yeah, so that's a perfect segue to what I was just about to touch on, which is, Nominet's not, like most organizations, Nominet is an organization of ambition, and we want to evolve as an organization, particularly recognizing that actually our domains under management have now reached a level of maturity. And so as a business, we want to be successful over the long term, which requires us to look at how we can diversify our revenue streams beyond just the domains. And so we've evolved our strategy. And we are very much focused on the mission of trying to create more of a vibrant digital future that is connected, inclusive, and secure. Now, that's one where we, as Nominet, are driving towards. We think there's a real symmetry between being a profit with a purpose organization, and we think the symmetry there is we have to generate profit over the long term in order to give back to having a positive impact via technology in society. And so our goal is to positively impact over 1 million lives a year through our social tech investments, as was, which is now migrating to our in-house activities, which is focused around giving grants and having a public benefit impact on those three areas of connected, inclusive, and secure. Now, why did we have to bring the Nominet ambition for having public benefit in-house as opposed to do it by the trust? It's probably the key question there. And I think that's an interesting story in the sense that We think Nominet Trust have done amazing things over the last 10 years. Nominet has collectively given Nominet Trust over £40 million during that time, and it's now evolved to be the leading social tech investor and grant giver in the UK. They have ambitions to achieve even bigger things, and we felt as though it was time after 10 years to look at how Normanet Trust can evolve its strategy to have a bigger impact on social technology. And social technology, as I've said earlier on, is a fairly broad field. And I think as we focus on connected, inclusive, and secure, and they're focusing on social technology, it was a natural time to say, actually, is Normanet Trust the right vehicle for Normanet as we look to do to have a social impact going forward? And it felt like the right time to review that, so we did review it. And Normanet Trust are looking at bringing in other partners into their organization and grow that, and I'm sure that will flourish, perhaps not under the Normanet Trust branding in future. And Normanet will look at ensuring that we've got skills in-house to appropriate funds and have an impact on our mission of a million lives a year via social technology, by investing in areas that go to our mission of connected, inclusive, and secure. So it was a focus, and because we wanted to have an impact on those three areas, connected, inclusive, secure, we wanted to have more of a control over what funds got appropriated where, which is difficult once you're operating under two distinct legal frameworks where Normanet doesn't have a direct influence over Normanet Trust. And so, as I say, with one organization focused on social technology, another one focused on connected, inclusive, and secure, we felt as though that was the right time to look at the options, and we've now decided that Normanet Trust will look at other partners going forward and likely rebrand under a different name. And that's happening at the moment. It's not concluded yet, so we will no doubt see the next incarnation of Normanet Trust over the course of the next few months, but that is literally in progress as we speak.
Thank you. This is Erica. I need some help from Marika is guiding me a bit in the background, so please don't be surprised because I can't see who is raising hands. I understand there is Wanda and then followed by Marilyn. Alan, you have to let me know if you want to come back to you to your question. And I saw Stephanie, but I'm not sure if she actually raised her hand. And since she, I believe, is only on the audio bridge, Stephanie, please let us know if I should put you in line. So, Stephanie, you want to be in line as well?
And Alan, my hand is back up again for this queue.
Perfect. So can I keep the order? I take Wanda, Marilyn, Alan, and wait in the near time if I hear something from Stephanie, and then I put myself in the queue as well. So Wanda, please.
Yeah. Thank you, Wanda, for the echo. Thank you, Hilso. It was very interesting. I have a question for you. That your fund, your trust, has a plan to expand the grants to out of UK. So you have those kind of plan, or you believe that you stay just. Give grants inside the UK. So, thank you.
It's Erica Russell. Please be so kind. Just answer this question, even if I don't come in, just to give us a little bit more time. Please. Russell, can you still hear us?
Erica, yes. Russell's line was disconnected. We're dialing in back now.
Okay, wonderful. We wait a second. Thank you so much.
And it looks like Russell's back. Is that correct, Russell?
Hi there. Sorry about that. I'm back now.
Hi, Russell. Did you hear the question? Or shall Wanda repeat it?
No, I didn't. I'm sorry.
Okay, Wanda, please be so kind.
Okay, Wanda again for the record. My question, so thank you very much for your presentation, very interesting. And my question quickly is, you have a plan to expand the give of your grants outside the United Kingdom, or just keep on United Kingdom organizations?
That's a really good question. We are, at the moment, given we are bringing it in-house, we are looking at the framework for which we decide where monies are appropriated around the connected, inclusive, and secure. Now, I think principally, we are looking at the UK, but we do acknowledge that there are, the internet is an international apparatus, and there may be very worthy initiatives that we would look to fund that are outside of the UK. So I think whilst there's a focus, we were not exclusive on the UK, but as I say, that's the primary focus.
Okay, thank you.
Marilyn, please. Marilyn, can you hear us?
This is Marika. I see that Marilyn is muted. Julie, can you maybe assist in unmuting Marilyn?
Yes. Okay, Marilyn.
Let me try again. Thanks.
No, you're good. You're good. You're good.
Thank you. My name is Marilyn Cade, and thank you so much for joining us. I first want to just say, as others may want to say as well, I have followed Nominate's work now for many, many years, and particularly appreciate the contributions that Nominate has made. I know you've been at Nominate for 3 years, but Nominate's contribution to stabilizing the role of the CC engagement at ICANN is quite impressive, and your role model through the trust is also quite impressive. So let me open my comments by saying that. I did want to go on to a couple of questions. I did post it at the end of the call, but I think I had last call, but I had been so late, it probably fell off. I'm interested in the learning experience that Nominate had from having an outside trust that then led you to decide, okay, we learned enough that we can take this on internally. And I'm going to be quite direct about my personal inquiry in this. I come from the business sector. I worked for a major corporation that had a significant foundation that would be called AT&T. I also helped to establish other small foundations that were external to the funders. I'm interested in your views on, did you learn something extraordinary when you had an external trust that now you feel like you have the skills to bring it inside and make it closer to your mission? And then I have a follow-up.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you for that. We're obviously glad to take part in these sort of discussions to play a role where we can. So the learnings, I would say, are ones principally around how to look at the vast array of potential opportunities that you could no doubt give funds to, and try to understand which one of those ideas is aligned or best aligned to the social impact. And so what Nominet Trust did well was have a clear sense of measuring what application had the strongest tie-in to having a social impact. And so without going into too much detail on this call, they developed a nowadays you probably call it through big data, some historic perspectives on what types of organization tended to be the most impactful and which organizations were typically more successful by looking at types of flaws or opportunities in the business models that were asking for grants. And so I wouldn't say that this was anything other than experience that was built up amongst the team that they codified via a number of different applications and tools to identify which were the hitting the sweet spot between those who were having social impact and those who were likely to continue because they had a good perspective on the market. So, for example, were they in digital skills training, were they likely to have a big impact because they had something unique to offer? It was identifying particular coding skills, or it was in a particular part of the UK, or there was a particular angle to who they were training, i.e., was it targeted to the younger generation or girls, or what was it specifically about their business model that would make them successful? So I think there's an element of trying to make sure you can separate the wheat from the chaff through the vaster amounts of applications that Nominet Trust got over the years. And we feel as though, you know, whilst we've not taken the intellectual property created through the Nominet Trust, we do feel as though we have an opportunity now to learn from their experiences of measuring social impact and apply that to our three pillars, which are focused, more focused for us around that connected, inclusive, secure, and not the broad brush of social tech, which I think we could all acknowledge is a fairly broad spectrum. And so, you know, we've actually also brought in one of the guys that used to work at Nominet Trust into our organization as well. So we are bringing some of that knowledge in-house. But, you know, I think more than anything else, we've learned that, you know, you can be overwhelmed by applications and what we've looked at over the course of the years as to whether we invest with just grants or whether we take structured debt or whether it's equity. There are a number of different financial instruments one could look at for having a social impact. Now, the Nominet Trust always focused on grants, and we never got into equity stakes or structured debt or any other hybrid debt instruments. And it was very focused on early stage grants, typically stage, you know, the kind of very seed or stage one of the growth process. So, you know, from our perspective, we've witnessed what they've been doing. We think we can apply that to what we are doing going forward. In some ways, because we've got three pillars where we're quite focused on the areas of impact we want to have, we, in some ways, theoretically, could be somewhat easier for us to identify which areas we want to support because we've got more flexibility. I think we could look at doing different instruments than just grants, but at the moment we're still working that through and yet to reach a final conclusion on that.
Marilyn, you had a follow-up question. This is Erica.
Thanks, Erica. Sorry, it's probably a two-part. So, Marilyn speaking. So I see a significant contribution made by a consistent funder, which to a large granting organization might be viewed as a small grantor, but if we were to allocate the investment from the funds, we would certainly have approximately, as far as I can tell, something close to the consistency of the funding that you have provided. So that's just kind of a short statement, because I want to ask a follow-up question. At ICANN, I am very, very concerned on behalf of the business community that I represent and with significant experience, frankly, not only my own but other businesses in organizing foundations, creating contributions to other funding mechanisms, concerns about the independence and the needed independence from ICANN itself. So I wanted to ask a question about your views on how we maintain a completely separate and independent approach as we go forward. Because right now I see a lot of people saying, pick me, pick me. I'm going to get funded. We're going to use the funding for this or that. And I think this need for an independent identity needs to be thoroughly understood. So perhaps you could comment about your views on it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess these are obviously personal views, but I mean, first of all, I think you mentioned earlier on, earlier in the discussion at least, it was referenced that ICANN has its own vision and goals and missions, which is fine. But what I would say is that this entity or whatever entity gets created, assuming there is one, for the appropriation of the funds, I think it needs to start with a mission, its own mission. And that needs to get created by an independent body. And you know, if you're going to go down the path of trying to set up an independent organization, it obviously needs to have its own board. It needs to have an independent view from ICANN, ideally. And whilst there may be some representatives of the ICANN board on the new entity board, I would suggest that most organizational structures would warrant that the organizational that's created for charity purposes has a degree of independence, and the organization, assuming there is one that gets created, would need to have its own mission that it could and should have a crossover with ICANN, I would suspect, but equally have its own objectives. Otherwise, I think you will get into a lot of hands out asking for funds, and there's no basis on which to clearly allocate and fairly allocate funds to organizations that are perhaps worthy of getting invested into. So I think it's perhaps stating the obvious in a way, but if there was an organization set up, then at least in drawing on the Nominet Trust experience, there was a degree of objectivity between the Nominet Trust trustees and what they wanted to do. Clearly a lot of dialogue between Nominet and Nominet Trust, but in our case, we saw the value in having independence between Nominet and Nominet Trust via the Board of Trustees. So as it relates to ICANN, I suspect that if the decision was to set up a separate legal entity, then that legal entity would need to have a degree of autonomy in terms of how it and where it invests.
Russell, thank you so much. We will bring in Xavier here a little bit later concerning one of the tax issues. Xavier, I'm pretty sure you're on the call, so... and Marika will send you a separate question But we will bring you in a bit later. I'd like to take Ellen now, and then Stephanie, and then I have myself in the queue. Ellen, please.
Thank you very much. It's Alan Greenberg speaking. The issue of what we fund and independence in terms of making decisions, I don't believe is a major issue in ICANN. Whether we outsource it or do it inside, we will still set up a mechanism to make sure we have independent evaluators that are not subjected to the pressures of the organization. I think what we're mainly interested here, at least I'm mainly interested, is what you have learned in terms of the mechanisms of how do you distribute the money, how do you evaluate projects afterwards. Now, you said originally that you set up a trust mainly for tax purposes. That's not an issue for us. We are considering either outsourcing it or setting up a separate organization as a more effective way of doing it, not necessarily as a more independent way of doing it. And I think we would like to understand, have you learned something from that kind of process? To some extent, if you look at what is in some areas a standard business practice of keep to your core mission, outsource something if it's not part of your core mission. That would indicate to us that we should outsource this business because our core mission is not giving away money, and we shouldn't clutter up our internal organization with it. On the other hand, costs may indicate that it might be a lot cheaper to do it in-house than to fund another organization or to outsource it to an existing other organization. And it's that kind of decision that we are looking for guidance on. In terms of giving away the money, evaluating projects, and going through the mechanics of the process, not so much which projects are we selecting for it. Thank you.
Marcel, do we still have you with us?
Yeah, sorry. I'm here. I'm just trying to process the question a little bit. So I want to make sure I answer the question specifically. I understand the point that you don't need to set up the in-house or external perspective is one of the elements, but equally, it doesn't sound like you're particularly interested in learning more about what we've been doing to get the independence. That sounds like something that I think you put in place, whether it's in-house or out-house. But what specifically would you like the guidance or some discussion on? I may have missed the question. Okay. I want to make sure I got the nub of it.
All right, thank you. Let me ask it from a different point of view. You originally set this organization up, you said, mainly for tax purposes. You could have now set up a second foundation with a different name to do what your new mission calls for you to do and kept the other one, which will look for other funders. But you've decided to bring it in-house. And perhaps part of it is you realize the tax issues were not relevant and you could handle it another way, or perhaps there are other issues that you considered in deciding to bring it in-house as opposed to build a second foundation since you now have the experience on how to do it. Thank you.
Thank you for clarifying the question. I mean, I guess my perspective would be that there are two principal reasons, perhaps more as I think about it on the hoof, that we looked at bringing in-house as opposed to create a separate trust. One is that we, by virtue of the fact we don't have a separate board, Nominet can more closely focus and control the quantum, the cadence, and the areas in which initiatives are funded. So that's the first point. It goes to the ability to control, kind of dial up and dial down what we do and when we do it. And that was, in effect, what we were trying to do with the Nominet Trust was to say, if Nominet has got proceeds, we will give that money to Nominet Trust. And Nominet Trust had its own infrastructure and needed to have a certain amount of funds going to it every year in order to keep it a viable entity and liquid entity. So actually bringing it in-house means that we don't need to worry about having separate infrastructure per se. We can do it more or less at our own choosing. And when we feel as though we want to put funds to a particular entity, maybe bigger than we've anticipated in the past, maybe smaller, but it just gives us that degree of control. It also means that if we feel as though more needs to go to a particular project that's in one of the three pillars I've talked about, we have that flexibility. So we're very much not set up our new foundation because we wanted that focus and flexibility of that kind of quantum and cadence, if you will, on particular areas of where we wanted to invest behind those three pillars. So that's principally the reason why we've not continued to look at the trust structure. And actually, just a small point, we do get some tax relief anyway on some of the charitable areas that we invest behind. So it's. I think originally we set up the trust because it was very much a tax efficient vehicle. But actually, you know, from our perspective, we can also get tax relief on some of the investments we're making directly. So the rationale for setting up a trust and actually in some ways putting an air gap from a governance perspective between Nominet and Nominet Trust or whichever vehicle we chose to set up. Didn't make sense anymore.
Okay, thank you so much. Alan, I would recommend to everybody as well, Russell, if you agree, if you have a follow-up question that we can send it to you, and hopefully you will be so kind to be able to answer these follow-up questions as well. Let me give the floor to Stephanie. Stephanie, are you with us? Can you hear us? Stephanie?
I'm looking for her line. One moment.
Stephanie, are you there?
She says her hand is not up.
She can't figure out how she can talk. She might have the same problem as I do have. This is Erica, Julie, or somebody else. Can somebody check if maybe she is muted?
Her line is not muted. Erica, I just checked.
Thank you so much, Julie. Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Wonderful. I actually didn't have anything to say. I think my hand must be showing up for you, and it's not. I'm just listening.
Okay. Sorry, you're showing up. Then let me go to Daniel.
Hi, hello. Can you hear me well?
Yes.
Okay. So I have a couple of questions and also a remark. I think some of the experts, I'm not sure if it was at the meeting or by email, mentioned that one of the risks when creating a new foundation, which is its own mission and independence, is that it's not going a temporary setup because it will have, in the end, a life of its own, and the ICANN auction grant ends. You know, when the action auction grant ends, then this foundation will probably have reason to want to survive. So that's a decision that we have to weigh in. That is, if we create a new foundation, then it has a high chance of surviving the auction fund and do something similar, maybe. Anyway, that was my remark. And as far as the question for an expert in managing projects, I have my own idea, but I'd like to understand what your point of view on the number of project officers, as we call them in Europe, you know, people that are managing grants, following everything from the evaluation to the review, etc., and whether that number depends on the size of the project, if there are sort of you know, a range of projects that need much more personnel than others in terms of their nature. Thanks.
It's Erica Russell, are you with us? Can you, did you hear the question and can you answer?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Once again, there's a bit of background noise, so I'm not quite sure I understood the nub of the question.
This was about how many project managers you are working with, and how many project manager relate. If you would imagine how big the projects are, the funding are in general.
So, let me put it in context. We did about, let's say, £3 million a year in grants, sometimes up to five. But we had overall 10 staff. And in terms of the number of people looking at projects and evaluating, I would say probably half of that, so four to five people evaluating projects, and we were probably looking at £25,000 a year. And there's probably a multiple of at least 10, you know, 20, let's say 20 times that in terms of the grant applications versus the grants. The fair velocity of grants. So let's say, for example, just in ball round numbers, around 500 applications a year, and around 20 grants were given of approximately anywhere between, 250,000 and below.
Thank you. So. This is Erica. So your grants are relatively small, and probably the case for ICANN will be probably a very different scenario. But it's good to learn from your example. I'm just checking who else is in the moment in the queue and who wants to raise a question. I can see in the moment again the if somebody is raising his hands or her hand. Is somebody in the queue?
Yeah, this is Marika. I believe all the hands and question marks that are still in the queue are old ones. I still see Vanda with a question mark, Marilyn with a hand and a question mark, Stephanie with a question mark, and Daniel with a hand. But I'm assuming at this stage that these are all old hands. And I actually haven't found a way yet in which we can clear the different statuses.
Okay, thank you so much. So then I was, Russell, I was wondering when you took the decision to insource the trust, what was the main argument for you to do this? And by the way, for our team who is managing the call, there's somebody still not muted. I hear it seems to be not Stephanie anymore, but somebody else. Can somebody please review and maybe do a force mute?
Yes.
Thank you so much. Russell, back to you. So my question is, what was the main reason why you are insourcing the trust?
Okay, that's fine. So for the record, Russell, So it goes back to some of the points I mentioned earlier on. I put them in three areas. One, as I've mentioned, one of the elements of having a separate trust is a separate governance structure and cost base that goes with that. So I think it's an organization that has, in our case, 10 people in Nominet Trust. That is an independent, has board of trustees, which, by the way, just for everybody's benefit, were not paid. And so the board of trustees were independent, unpaid, were chaired by somebody who was, again, unpaid, and had people who were either part-time or full-time in the organization that were paid. So, you know, there was a cost to keeping a trust running, but also it was to a degree independent of Nominec. And what we wanted to do was direct our grants and public benefit activities around the three pillars that I've mentioned already, around the connected, inclusive, and secure, that so it was tied closer to Nominec's mission. The other point I've not mentioned so far, which I think is an important concept for us, is I wanted to make sure that people in the organization at Nominec felt very connected to public benefit. When people walk in the morning and do whatever job they do in the organization, it's important for them to feel as though they are part of us having an impact on society, a positive impact on society. And by us looking at what initiatives we want to fund, we're also involving staff across the organization. And, you know, that could be the corporate lawyers looking at what we are doing in terms of reviewing the structure for a public benefit investment. It could be people who are in all walks of life, including the help desk, even on why we would look at doing a particular investment in a project, going through to even leveraging some of our technical expertise. So we have a bunch of very smart guys in our emerging technology and innovation team who really understand the wireless spectrum market. And so when we are looking at connecting with our TV white space and dynamic spectrum management communities in Scotland, then that we can draw on the expertise of the people in our innovation team. And that's really motivational for them when they see that they're actually having a benefit of connecting rural communities with wireless broadband who would never have got connected otherwise. So I think through a number of reasons, to remind you, one of which is around governance, and by bringing it in-house, we have less of that. By bringing it in-house, we have less cost. And by bringing it in-house, we have more involvement on where we can direct funds, but equally we can engage staff directly, and that's quite motivational for people in the organization.
This is Erica. Very interesting. Just a follow-up question, if I may have. One to the current model and one to the past model. I would assume that even when the trust was outside of the organization, you still kept oversight. And coming back to the current model, it feels like you don't have a final decision structure. So who is making the final decision after you consulted with so many people inside the organization? Who's making the final decision for a particular fund to support a project?
In the old world at Nominec Trust, it was through a number of initiatives, but each grant was granted by the board. So the initiatives that were getting recommended and approved was at the Nominec Trust board. And so that was one thing. In the new world, meaning where Nominec is doing public benefit ourselves, in-house, if you will, effectively, we have a certain degree of discretion as to what I'm able to support as a chief executive. If it's a fairly significant sum, we probably take that to our board. So we have a number of structures whereby below a certain amount,
I will approve it, but above a certain amount, it would go to our board. And we are working through a framework at the moment to identify on what grounds we invest in something and on what grounds we don't, but primarily based on its suitability, feasibility, and the transparency on which we can measure social impact.
This is Erica. Russell, thank you so much. I do have the feeling we don't have anybody else in the queue, which means we may have exhausted the question for the moment. Can I come back to my point? Can we come back?
Erica, Alan, I am in the queue.
Alan, sorry then. Please go ahead.
Yeah.
I take you, just give me a second. I take you as the last one. If everybody agrees, because we still have to talk a little bit about the work plan later. And I hope we can come back to Russell if we have other questions in the near future. Alan, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Just an observation. If I understood what Russell said, then with the in-house operation, one of the benefits is the board, for instance, can weigh in and say, yes, we'd like to shift focus a little bit, or we favor this project, and certainly the board has the last say, I think he said, on whether to fund something or not. In our environment, I suspect if our board started doing that, we would call that interference, and we would not want the board to weigh in over the independent group of people that we put together as the evaluators. So it just shows the contrast in different organizations and how they the philosophy of how they will make these kind of decisions. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Alan, this raises an interesting point. This is Erica, which we should put on our to-do list and on our work plan. There might be a time where we will have to review if the current model we are looking into, depending on the outcome of the model we are favoring, or the mechanism, as we call it, if there needs to be a kind of, you know, evaluation board or something, or cross-community conflict resolution board or something in case conflict arises. So maybe we should put this on one of our future calls. We shouldn't talk about it right now, but we definitely may want to look into this. Thanks so much for this point, Alan. Russell, coming back to you, are you fine that we send you some follow-up questions if they come up?
Yes, well, I that's absolutely fine. I'm happy to do that. The only thing I would say is the more concise, the better. So we can respond to that as quickly as possible. I just want to come back to the prior point that was around perhaps the independence point, which is I want to be careful and make sure everybody's understood what I was saying there, which is in the Nominet Trust world, they have their own board, and in Nominet, we have our own board. We have a series of frameworks and assessments that we go through to look at which ones we need to escalate to the board. Not all of the ones, particularly in the context of Nominet, will go for board approval, only over a certain size or if they are in somewhat unique or delicate in some ways. We've not had that experience too many times, but I just want to make sure that point was understood, which is there are, in the Nominet Trust world, there was a set of procedures and clearly identified processes before it got to the board, but equally, you know, it was a kind of recommendation to the board that the board could then agree on. And as contrast that with the Nominet situation where we only go to the board over a certain amount, which may be helpful in the context of in an ICANN setting, you may only want to get board approval for amounts over a certain threshold, or where there's some areas that fall slightly outside of the mandate for the grant giving organization.
Thank you so much. But it's a good point because, and Alan's follow-up question was good because it helps us to focus on another aspect which we have to look into it. Therefore, thank you so much, and thank you for coming back to this point. Russell, thanks so much again. Feel free to stay with us and to listen to our work plan. But if you haven't had enough from discussing potential funding of our foundation model, please feel free to do something else. Thank you so much again. Marika, can I give the floor to you? There was one question that Ching had, just to tell you.
Thank you.
He was interested. Thank you so much, Russell. There was one question Ching has in relation to tax issues, which should have gone to Xavier, but we have difficulty in ensuring that Xavier can respond. We know he's on the call, but we have difficulty in transmitting the question to him. So I recommend we send him the question, and then he can respond to it by email. So, Marika, would you be so kind to explain the our work plan to us?
There we go.
Oh, Xavier.
Yeah, I've been on all the time. I'm not sure what difficulty there has been. Ching has asked a question in the chat, which I responded in the chat.
Oh, you did already.
It was not related to tax issues, so I'm happy to answer any tax-related questions.
Just go ahead. The only question he was if it would be, if I can, this new entity would be allowed to finance projects outside of the United States based on the current tax model which we have.
Well, based on the current tax status of ICANN, there's no specific issue with overseeing any grants on a worldwide basis. There would be operational and logistical challenges, but that's not anything different than what we do today when we operate anywhere else in the world than in the United States. If there would be a new entity created, we would need to ensure the consistency of the tax status, which is dependent upon the mission and a number of other criteria. We would need to ensure the consistency of the tax status to ensure that there's no taxable activities, and that's unrelated as to whether they are within the U.S. or in another country. But that would be a setup of that new entity that would determine and drive that we have no tax impact, or that we do have tax impacts, depending upon what the setup of the organization would be. So that's something we need to be really careful about, but it's not, in my views, connected to whether the grants are made within or outside of the United States. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Xavier. It's another issue which we will have to look into in more depth in the near future. So, Marika, now to you.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Erica. And if for those that are on WebEx, if you go to the top of the screen, you see a tab that starts with work plan. And note, this is also the document that Erica circulated on the mailing list, I believe, yesterday. So as outlined in the email, staff worked with the leadership team to review the work plan following our meetings at ICANN 61, and you know, with a goal of trying to get to an initial report by the ICANN meeting in Panama, which is in June of this year. So as a result of that, you see that we've made quite a number of modifications to the work plan. I know that we have a drop line. Julie, if you could identify that line and maybe mute it.
Yep. I'm trying. One moment.
Thank you. So in order to be able to meet that target of having an initial report out for public comment prior to the Panama meeting, we've had to add quite a few additional meetings to the list. So we basically moved from having meetings every 2 weeks to meeting on a more weekly basis. And of course, it would also require the related preparation and review of materials to be able to move in this pace. So I think as Erica's email outlined, what we're looking for now is a commitment or an indication if CCWG members, especially, but of course also participants, are not able to meet this pace of work, because of course we're dependent on your participation and input to meet such an ambitious timeline. So again, that was circulated on the list yesterday. I don't know if everyone already had a chance to look at that. Erica, I don't know if it would make sense. Of course, if people have comments at the moment, they can, of course, reach, put up their hands. But I don't know if it's worth to give people a couple of additional days to look at this, and maybe we can put in a deadline by, I don't know, Tuesday of next week for anyone that has any concerns or objections to this timeline to share that either with the mailing list or off list, so the leadership team has a better idea of whether this work plan is realistic and you know, people are able and willing to make the commitment to join the meetings that will be scheduled then over the next couple of weeks. Does that make sense, Erica? Is there anything else you want to add to that?
Yeah, this is Erica. No, I think you captured the topic well. When we review, somebody needs to review. So when we review the list, is this me?
Maureen's line.
It's Maureen's line. Maureen, can you be checked, please? So when we reviewed the list, we came to the conclusion we have to, we need more meetings, because I think it's extremely important that we have a deadline. If we work without a deadline and we continue after Panama, I think it's just not healthy for setting up goals and for defining such an important project where so many things are depending upon. So I think we need to have this deadline, but to meet the deadline, we need to have more calls. Now, there's another way of doing it, and you might want to take it into consideration, both Marika and Joker and the team and everybody on this call. If you don't like weekly calls, we could, of course, extend our calls. And if we are fast and we cover more topics in a single call, we are fine. But, I mean, that's another option, that we extend it to at least 2.5, if not 3 hours, just to cover the work that we need to do. So, Marika, can we extend it next week until Wednesday? Because I think it's Eastern. Tuesday is maybe a little bit tight for everybody. Is Wednesday still working for us internally?
Yes, this is Marika. I believe that is fine. There is one note with regards to next week's meeting. We're trying to confirm participation from the European Commission and EIB for an exchange of views and a Q&A session similar to what we did today, but we likely won't have a confirmation on that until early next week. So I think we probably want to ask everyone to pencil it in. We will send out a call notification for next week, but do keep in mind that the actual taking place of that call is dependent on their availability.
Yes, good that you mentioned this. In the moment, I receive only information that they are next week all on holiday. It's a holiday week, Eastern week for most European institutions, so most of them are closed next week, and this includes the EIB. Now, we might get one person, but I'm not certain if it's going to work out. So keep this in mind. There might be a meeting with an expert next week on Thursday, but very likely not. But please keep a slot reserved in your calendar for next week, Thursday. Can we agree upon this? Okay. I don't see a comment. I don't hear anybody. We will send you a follow-up email like we always do, and with all of the information. So maybe there's a call next week, Thursday, with the European the Commission and the European Investment Bank. And if not, then we will have a call in 2 weeks' time, and you receive an email from us. And we wish you happy, those which are having Eastern time, happy Eastern time, and enjoy the long weekend. Thanks so much to everybody.
Thanks all.
Thanks everyone. Today's call has been adjourned. Operator, can you please stop the recording? Everyone have a good rest of your day.